Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell. I'm sitting here with Sarah McDooling, and we're across from Madonna King, who's coming to talk about fathers and daughters, not the subject in general, but her new book. Welcome, Madonna.
Thank you. Thanks, John. Thanks, Sarah.
And we can discuss the subject.
I was going to say, it'll probably come up, right?
Yeah. We'll be talking about fathers and daughters somewhere in the middle of this, won't we?
Probably. Yeah. I hope so.
Can you give us just a brief outline as to, I mean, you've had great success with being 14, and now you've come up with fathers and daughters. Just a brief outline as what you were trying to achieve with this book and how it came into being.
Yeah, so as you know, being 14 became quite popular because I think if someone struggled with their 14-year-old, they were starting to think, look, it's my parenting, and be a bit embarrassed. Once they knew it was a phenomenon, they thought, well, I'm just going to get some assistance in doing this. And I was doing a parenting talk in Adelaide at Seymour College. And I went to catch the cab to the airport, and this dad chased me, and he had a stepdaughter and a daughter. He said, that's okay, that's fine, but what can I do to stay close to my daughter? I've tried everything. And I got in the car and I couldn't give him an answer that I hadn't, I didn't know what to say to him. And I, all the way back to the airport, I thought, you know, I keep talking about mums and daughters and 14-year-old girls. Where do dads stand in this? And I thought, I'm going to find out. So I have taken the advice of 1,300 girls between the ages of 10 and 17, 400 dads and 60 mums. And I've asked questions like, when was the last time you spent 10 minutes really talking to your dad? And then to the dad, when was the last time you spent 10 minutes talking to your daughter? What do you talk about? What would you tell your dad but you wouldn't tell your mum, and vice versa? What are the things you go to your dad for? Are there qualities that you admire in him? And with the dad, you know, what's your relationship? You know, boy, does that change whether his daughter is 8 or 14.
Wow.
You know, and there's, I think I could safely say that dads are, they're everything to their girls. You know, they call them their little princesses and they follow them around. And, you know, all these dads who told me about the day that their daughter slid her hand out from his on the way to school, you know, and that was kind of the change, because they go to school and they realize, oh, there's other dads, oh, and his rules are different, and all of a sudden he's no longer unchallengeable. And then she hits puberty, and well, he's a boy, what would he know? And so she takes a step back, she goes to a room and shuts the door. And so I think lots of dads are lost. They think, I'll give her a privacy, I'll make this easier, and they step back too. And in doing that, I think it makes it really difficult then to stay connected if they take that step back.
I love the fact that this started with, I haven't got an answer for him. Mm. I love the fact that you went, I better find out.
And you think of dads, because so much of the discussion about parenting has been about mums. Mm. And I think we are now at the stage where dads really want to get involved in school principals, because I interviewed several dozen. So, you know, probably up to maybe 60 or 70 experts that were principals, psychologists, parenting experts, CEOs, teen psychologists. And fathers want to get involved. But, you know, workplaces see a male worker as a worker first and a dad second. What do they see women as? A mum first and a worker second. And neither of those are right or wrong, but I think dads are now wanting a bigger role in their daughters' lives. And I think schools are onto that. You know, they've now got dads and daughter dances and dads and daughter breakfasts and International Women's Day with dads, which are all a little bit tokenistic, but I guess you've got to start somewhere. Mm. But, you know, it's a brave dad to line up on the side of the netball court on a Saturday morning and find a position in the front row, isn't it?
Mm.
You know? And so my heart goes out to fathers. I think they're trying, but they're a bit lost. And if they took that step back when their daughter was 12, she's now got her relationship with mum and her friends and her social media. And dad, who's been the provider and wants to change that to becoming the parent, just isn't quite sure where to go.
Was there any particular thing that you learnt while researching this book that really, really surprised you?
Yeah. There are four things that I think mean that a father and a daughter stay really close during that really tricky time. And they stood out like beacons. The first, because my children aren't sporty, the first is, if your daughter is sporty, And Dad follows those sports. So I'm not saying netball. I'm saying like swimming, hockey, AFL, horse riding. There is a natural affection. And Dad will take her to the swimming training and pick her up and maybe coach the team. And so those girls almost unanimously would talk to their dad about things that other girls wouldn't. That was the first that stood out because my girls aren't sporty. Number two, and this came from the girls and the principals, the girls who are at boarding schools and who want to go back and work on the land just adore their dad. And while they'll ring each week and dad will answer, hello, I'll put your mother on, and she mainly talks to her mum, it's her dad that she really is close to, I guess. The third is the amount of affection Dad shows and if he steps back, but it was the fourth. And this is something that particularly in the wake of same-sex marriage, the Republic debate, the refugees, I think is so important. And that is we send our kids to school, our girls to school, so they can learn to critically analyze, they can prosecute a case, they can stand up in confidence, they can smash the boys in the debating team. But then they come home and they say, well, Dad, I am all for same-sex marriage. And he says, oh, you're silly. Don't ever say that. You know, that thing of one principal said to me, dads can be QC in the courtroom, but they've got to be dad in the lounge room. And the same with teachers too. I heard it a lot from girls, that if a girl comes home and puts an argument, by all means disagree with the argument, don't put it on her, because she will go to school and she'll say, oh, Dad said I'm silly. But I've got quote after quote in my book of girls saying, oh, why would I tell Dad anything? He's just really old-fashioned. You know, he doesn't believe in same-sex marriage. Or I'm not going home and telling Dad. Or I just tell Dad what he wants to hear so that it's not a debate. And I think, oh, that's so sad, because it's just how dads say it.
Yeah.
You know, attack the argument. Don't just...
daughter.
Yeah. And, you know, like dads have had years, maybe even decades, to come up with a view. You know, I support the Liberal Party or the Labor Party or the Greens for this reason, you know, and in 2007 they did this. And but girls are just starting to formulate at 11 and 12 and 13. So maybe they're even trying to bait you a little bit, or maybe they just think that because their friends think it. So your response is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I know I talk a lot, but can I say one other thing that really surprised me?
Oh, please.
This is the podcast. People talk in podcasts.
We're here to give
you can go for it.
That's I talk too fast. You know, the power of a father to determine or to influence who his daughter dates and ends up with is huge. And every piece of research would suggest it's more than a mother's influence. So fathers say, well, you know, I don't have a lot of influence over her now. The way he talks to his partner, to his sister, to her, to any other woman, is how she then learns to be spoken to. And how powerful is that? So, and there's a whole lot of research around that will dictate the type of person she goes out with, the type of relationship she has, even at what age she becomes sexually active. And so the shotgun lines, you know, bring someone around and I'll, you know, I'll get out the shotgun, or I speak to one girl whose father has convinced her he works for the SAS. And he said, you know, the moment you get a boyfriend, they're going to be tracking him and they'll know where you are and what you're doing. And she looks at me and she said, he's serious, I think. She's just not sure, and her friends are nodding. But, you know, that kind of overprotectionism with girls and how dads parent their daughters compared to their sons is huge. Girls will say that, you know, one girl said, you know, I thought it was great Dad let me go to Coles by myself, you know, and he hadn't been doing it. And then I realized he's tracking my movement on the mobile phone.
Oh my God.
My phone ran out of battery. So he's driving around and around Coles thinking I've been kidnapped. And she's in the store. But they don't do that with boys, do they? Mm-hmm. And the girl's argument is that, you know, why? It makes them feel weaker. And principals and educationalists and psychologists say, be really aware of that, because you might be feeding a vulnerability. You might be making them think they're always unsafe and they're not strong, that they are weak. And that's the opposite of what we want our girls to think.
What do the fathers say about that? Like, what are they?
Yeah, what a clever question, because exactly the same. I said, you know, do you gender, parent by gender, yes, well, she needs more protection than my son, or my son needs to toughen up, she doesn't, or there's bigger, badder things in the world for my daughter. I may be wrong, but I can't think of a response where a father said, no, I parent them exactly the same. Now, some of them said, look, I parent them differently because, you know, my boy's a brat, or, you know, because of personality. But overwhelmingly, fathers thought it was fine to parent someone that way because she was a girl and because he was a boy.
I know from my own experience, I've got a stepdaughter, and I wasn't really behind the scenes in teen girl life, but I was definitely behind the scenes in teen boy life.
Yeah.
And so I heard everything was being said, and I heard the objectives, and I heard, so I have this kind of double fear of what they're like when they're in a group, more on teens, more on teen boys. And so I have this in my head, that's my first thing I think of, is these idiots that used to hang around and talk around and going, well, they must be the same now.
Experts say that, you know, that dads often think, remember what they were like at 15, and that's what they're afraid of. But, you know, they've got to have confidence that their girls are strong and bright and clever and that they can deal with that, because you can't actually protect them from being hurt. There's some stories too where dads, go figure, but dads get really upset sometimes when their daughter breaks up with a boy that they really like. And there's all these cases of dads continuing to ask the boy to go fishing or to go to the football. And girls are saying, but dad, I've broken up with him. And I went to the clinical psychologist and the author, Andrew Fuller, who I just love. He said, oh, yeah, that's really common, you know, and dads shouldn't. When the girl breaks up with a boyfriend, that's the end of your relationship too.
That's strange.
He said, and it's very clever, he said that sometimes he thinks that some men may have had their mates when they're 18 or 17 and have still got those mates and they still see them. So they're still seeing things like that. So their daughter arrives with a 17-year-old and they get on really well and he's one of the boys and he's a mate. No.
No.
That and the shotgun, just put it away. But, you know, John, can I mention you said stepfathers? And I forget the figure. I think it's 617,000 families in Australia in the last census are step families with children, or separated families that may be with children. But the power, it doesn't matter if your child is the subject of a separation, a divorce. It's whether or not a stepfather or a father or a father figure is there. And there's this one girl I'll always remember, her face. And I'm sitting around a table with a group of 15-year-olds and we're talking about how present your dad is, because if girls wanted one thing, it's their dad to be present, to have time with them. And she said, my father's an anaesthetist. And there wasn't a hint of pride in her voice. And she said, he works all week and I'm asleep when he gets home. On Saturday, I have to walk around on eggshells because he's really tired. And on Sunday, yeah, we catch up. But she described their relationship as cordial more than warm. He's there. He's there every night, but he's not. So a separated family or a stepdad or a father who is divorced and living separately from his children can have a better relationship than a dad in the bedroom next door if he gives his girl that time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them don't, but, you know, a lot of them do too.
This makes me really emotional. From the second at the beginning of the podcast that you mentioned with the first time a little girl takes her hand out of her dad's, that's really, I've been feeling extraordinarily emotional.
But it's true, isn't it? Because, you know, they sit on their lap and they jump on their chest and dad's always the person who'll jump in the pool with them first or on the trampoline. Mm-hmm. You know, he's kind of the fun guy, you know, but it gets to that point, that things tricky change. Point where, yeah, he's the embarrassing guy. You know, those jokes that they just used to laugh at are no longer funny.
Dad jokes.
Yeah, and there's a role for mums here too, because, you know, there's a couple of principals who pointed this out to me, that that mums have to take a step back for dads to take a step forward. And one principal said to me, you know, imagine if you were packing the dishwasher each night and your husband says, you know, look, I'll pack it. Now, some of us will say yes, but some will say, oh, okay, and then wait till they go to bed and do it properly so the glasses won't break. And it's like her point is fathers might have been off working and might have realised what they missed, but they can get it wrong because we've got it wrong and you're there so you can fix it, but we've got to let them pack the dishwasher. We've got to let them make mistakes. How can they learn? There's two ways of doing up a nappy. You know, one's not necessarily better than the other.
Yeah.
And the secret women's business side of things, where a lot of men will feel they can't go into certain places. Like it's just when certain subjects come up, it's kind of right. We'll be back in a moment. We're just going to discuss this.
Like puberty.
Puberty and sexuality and all these things that which are embarrassing for dad to hear, but okay for mum to hear. Those kind of things.
From the dad's point of view, do you think it's embarrassing or the girl's point?
I don't know. I don't know whether it's being driven by, I'll step aside now because mum's taking it over, or if it's being driven by, like, I can't even imagine jumping in on that because of the, I suppose, the difference, the difference between the sexes in that sense on that area, because I don't want to intrude on something which is quite private.
But you don't want to intrude, and potentially, like, a girl will not want to embarrass her dad. Like,
no, but it's not intruding because he's her dad. Yeah. So it's not like saying, you know, have you got your period? No, it's like just recognizing that she's growing up, and the next time you're going shopping, you're like, you know, does anyone need any hygiene? You know, and she goes, oh, God, Dad knows. You know, I sent my two girls to this night where they explained it in groups, and they said a lovely thing. They said, you know, it might be hard to talk to your dad about this, but you just go home tonight and you say, when it happens, he's got a front with his credit card and you get to buy a dress on his credit card. So that just, their little minds, they went straight home and said, Dad, you know, when I reach puberty, you're buying me a dress. Now, when it happened, both of them have just come out and said, Dad, when are we going shopping? So it's been never mentioned. But I think that idea of not making a big deal out of it, but recognising it's just part of life. And indeed, that's why sometimes she's grumpy and hormonal and teary, and that you as her dad understands. And boys are the same. There's a clinical psychologist in Adelaide who said to me, you know, when your daughter is dating a boy or starting to, like, just ask questions. Don't give a piece of advice until you've asked 10 questions. And it might be just, you know, so what subjects does he do, or how did you meet him? Is he into debating? You know, oh, so he plays union. So she sees you're actually interested in knowing him, not in just stopping her doing something. And then once she knows you're interested, it's more likely that she will accept you saying, you know, this is a piece of advice I wish I learned, but, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think the way our teens are now, often in the way young men, not through their own fault, but through what they're seeing online, are treating young women, and how young women are happy to be treated that way, we as adults have got to change it. You know, we've got to, courtship has got to be considered as cool. Like, dad, it can't be considered as old-fashioned and something dad did. And girls have really got to value being spoken to nicely more than they value an invite to the next dance. I think, or we've got a tsunami of problems coming our way.
Which sounds so simple. It sounds simple. Like, obviously you should value being spoken to well, but so easily, like, that's what gets lost.
Yeah, I think the irony is we've got this generation of young, confident, articulate, really clever girls, but the moment a boy is on the scene, that just seems to go out the window. You know, this self-image is such a huge problem, you know, and so they judge themselves then on whether he thinks she's pretty. You know, what does it matter? You know? And I think that how we actually teach our girls, it's, you can be so confident here, and if it's the same boy you're up against on a debate or a science project, you don't see it in those terms. So why do you then turn on yourself in a sense? And turn on your friends in a sense? But that's part of the challenge of social media, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it also ties into There's such a, well, it feels like, I don't know whether it's just me, but it feels like there's such pressure to succeed commercially in careers rather than vocationally. You know, there's a sort of, to my mind, it's a sort of split differently. A vocation, you might take a lesser wage because you think your job is value, and you're affecting all these people and you have a place in the community. And that's one way of sort of getting self-esteem. And then there's the other side of it. Now, I think more people are caught up in this because of small businesses and medium-sized businesses, where it's just commercial realities sort of pushing through. And there, and to get well there, to succeed there, you don't need all the things like you were describing before. Politeness. There are a different set of assets that you need to get on in the world of business than you might get on the world as being a nurse or being a teacher, or being a more vocational, or even lawyers and like where you may choose to do the good thing via the community rather than the...
Maybe, but if you want to be a doctor, I want you to be able to diagnose an illness well, but I want a beautiful bedside manner if you're telling someone they're dying.
That's what I'm saying. I think in that sense, I think you've got more chance of finding a doctor who can do that than someone who is really just out to beat a competitor.
Yeah. So I think, that's a problem with our education system, because to get to university, you need that ATAR. And what does it assess? Science, maths, English, history, whatever. There's nothing on there that says critical thinking skills, judgment, teamwork, A+ or 99.5. But once you get your job, what are the attributes that are going to determine whether you lead the company or not? And it's not academic. It is whether you can take people with you. And you look at our political processes at the moment over the last 7 or 8 years, what we've got is politicians from both sides who haven't been able to take voters with them. But we see it in corporate Australia. Look at the inquiry into the banks. Look at all of those things. And I think it's a fundamental failure of leadership. But parents can't be blamed for that, while our education system only rewards academic merit at the expense of soft skills. I mean, ironically, we even call them the soft skills.
Yeah.
Then there is a problem.
Mm.
And it only matters. But how do we tell our kids that? I go and speak to schools. And at one school recently, a year 9 teacher said to me, how do I tell my girls that 89% is not a failure? Because it's a high-achieving school and those on 89% may be a fair bit down from those on 99%. Now, that's not a failure, but if everyone around her is getting a higher mark, that's how they determine it. I would love to see our education system just change to reward those skills that will determine leadership down the track. And you still have to be bright, but surely there needs to be a combination.
Mm. Yeah. Donna, thank you so much for coming in. It's been one week. This is a Pandora's box. You can open this and just keep going. There's so much to talk about. You've written a whole book about it. So I think if anyone wants...
You've got to read the rest.
Yeah, if anyone wants to go into it more deeply, then buy the book from Booktopia. But, it is a fascinating subject and it can be looked at. And this book will generate conversations. And I'm really happy that you've put this out there, that these conversations are going. Because both Sarah and I... Before you walked in the door, we weren't thinking about this, and but now
I'm deeply thinking.
We're analysing our own relationship.
Calling my dad tonight for a chat. Yeah.
And thanks to Booktopia for being interested in the issue too, because I think we probably all need to address it as a community.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And you can get hold of Madonna's books at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.